Welcome to Dakota Midday. Good afternoon to you. I'm Kara Hetland, and it is Wednesday and time for our regular Dakota Political Junkies segment. Joining the program this week, our KELO-TV Rapid City reporter Kevin Wooster and Denise Ross, the editor of the Black Hills Knowledge Network, South Dakota Dashboard. Kevin and Denise, thanks so much for being here today.
It's great to be here, Kara.
I feel a little overmatched every time it's Denise on the other side.
Oh, whatever, Wooster.
Well, so let's start with the news yesterday of Clayton Walker being sentenced. He pled guilty for perjury during his Senate campaign and the whole issue of petitions. So, Kevin, why don't you go first? Talk a little bit about Clayton Walker.
Well, I think Judge Brown made a good decision when he asked him to get a mental evaluation based on some of his behavior, and you know, maybe somebody would say the same about me sometime, but he was certainly erratic in what he was doing, and if it's true that he had some names of Hollywood stars and dead people on his petitions, as it was claimed, there were some things going on with Clayton that were beyond politics, I'm afraid, and it was kind of unfortunate that whole thing worked out the way it was. I was kind of glad that he didn't get sentenced to jail, just as, frankly, I was kind of glad that Annette Bosworth didn't get sentenced. So it seems like the judge reached a pretty reasonable verdict there, or sentence. Okay.
Denise, anything to add?
Well, I think, you know, if you look, I was reading the comments on some of the newspaper articles, and the instant comparison was to the Annette Bosworth case. Mm-hmm. They're similar, but not the same. What she did was sign and say that she had witnessed other people signing her petition. He fabricated names and wrote them in on his petition. And yet, I think she got punished more severely. She had more, hundreds of more hours of community service. Help me out here, Kevin. I can't remember all the details. But then she, of course, ended up losing her medical license.
Yeah.
And it all seems to me like a lot for what I think, and I didn't sit through the trial and didn't read all the evidence, but I think it could easily be explained as a misunderstanding. That was certainly her defense. And the other thing is, you know, she didn't win. She's not holding public office. She's not holding public trust. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what do we do when somebody who's running for office and comes in, you know, in the single digits and didn't handle everything exactly properly along the way? You know, our election law is so sacrosanct that we have to take this aggressive measure in prosecuting people. It's something that I'm reflecting on and kind of have vacillated back and forth on what the best approach is in this situation.
Well, the Attorney General made the comment, though, that, you know, one pled guilty and the other never owned up to it.
Well, I certainly think there's an issue there with, you know, the Attorney General felt and some others felt that Annette Bosworth wasn't telling the truth and she didn't fess up and she maybe even tried to avoid and cover up the truth. And of course, that always gets to be a big deal, you know, sometimes magnifies by many times the original issue. And I don't know if that's true or not. I do agree with Denise that it seems like Annette Bosworth is being punished pretty severely here. And I guess in my case, what really strikes me is that she would have her medical license taken away from her. Mm-hmm. If I remember right, it was 500 hours of community service, which is a lot. And she was doing that down on Pine Ridge, where most doctors don't really want to go very much and maybe had the potential to do some good work. I wonder about that. I certainly don't see anything that indicates that she's a threat to her patients, that she was a threat to the medical profession. And sometimes you wonder if somebody's mouth leads them to get harsher penalties at any level than somebody who doesn't maybe speak up as much or say certain things.
But in the end, the state legislature changed some election laws, and now the Secretary of State can just kind of do random audits of signatures and that kind of thing. Are we going to see more cases like this, do you think, or fewer?
Well, you know, I think if you look at all of the ballot initiatives that are coming in 2016, and get ready, South Dakota, there, I was taking my sons to soccer on Saturday morning, and two new ones. I'd already signed petitions for four other ones, and two new ones. And there's way more than that coming. And with all of those petitions coming in, and some of the issues, you know, there's some people in power who maybe don't want to see some of these things come forward. You're going to see some real scrutiny to all of those petitions. The people circulating those petitions in general are pretty professional, and I think they'll probably pass muster. But, yeah, I think this is becoming a real area of interest in politics and how you gather your petitions. Did you dot every I and cross every T? And I hope we can all keep sight of the whole idea of democracy, where you do let people vote and have a voice on these issues, and maybe a technicality here or there, as long as it wasn't intentional, you know, that you were trying to violate the law. I'm hoping that we can have keep the spirit of democracy in mind.
And are all of these petitions legit? Do South Dakotans really know what they're signing?
Well, I think there's one that's certainly on the payday lending thing that's designed specifically to confuse and damage another petition effort to limit interest rates and essentially kill the industry in South Dakota. But otherwise, I mean, pretty much, do they know what they're signing? I doubt it. Depends on how well the person is informed to begin with and how well they explain it. And I've certainly heard a wide variety of explanations on issues when I stand and listen to people, you know, that are reaching out to people for a signature. Some are very, very good and very thorough and very fair, and others are a little bit more abbreviated and a little bit more slanted. So I certainly think there's some petitions signed that people don't completely understand it, but I tend to agree with Denise that the process has not worked horribly, and I think we don't want to knee-jerk ourselves into manipulating a system that's not operating too badly right now.
Mm-hmm. Sioux Falls City Councilor Kermit Staggers is hospitalized, missed the vote on the budget. And I know this is the opposite end of the state from you all, but do you have any comments, any thoughts, any knowledge?
Well, I had an opportunity to cover Kermit when he was in the legislature. And as I was reading about that and the fact that he missed that meeting, and that one city councilor missed that meeting, but what an impact that had on the whole process. And there was another city council person who brought his budget amendments to the floor so that they could get voted on. I was thinking of the value of having the Kermit Staggerses of the world in these roles in city councils and legislatures and school boards and all over the local government. As a budget hawk, and Kermit, and in the legislature, he could drive everybody crazy, including the reporters, who you just get road weary after a while. You get tired. You know what's happening. Let's get this done. Let's get this going so we can all go home. And Kermit comes in and holds the line and scrutinizes, and I think there's a real valuable role for people like that in the process. And so what struck me of the whole thing, and I certainly wish him well in his health and that he recovers fully, but what a value they bring to the process, and how missed they are when they're absent all of a sudden.
Yeah, I agree 100%. In fact, I think Kermit was the one that Jankla was so thrilled that he finally got him to vote for a package that had evolved to the point that Jankla went down on the floor and gave him a kiss on the top of his head, which it didn't happen a lot if Jankla came down to give you something if you're a legislator.
It usually wasn't a kiss, was it?
No.
Well, we're seeing some increase in some property taxes. Rapid City property owners are going to pay, 1.5% in the tax rate. Are we seeing this? Why are we seeing this happen, especially with there's a freeze?
Well, that falls within the law. If it's the one you're talking about where they've just not done that the last few years because Sam Quaker kind of, when he was mayor, didn't particularly care for that and put it up so that the commission had to vote specifically on it to pass it. It wasn't automatic, and it became a kind of a political issue. And Steve Allender, new mayor, thought that was silly, that we're losing ground a little bit at a time. These are small increases, but they allow a city that's really in serious shape for infrastructure and other needs to slip even a little bit further behind. So the argument is, do you go with just because it's allowed under the law to have this increase, should you have it, or should you hold the line? And I guess right now, owners feeling like it, you should try to keep pace if you can, and got enough to agree with him.
Congressional delegation all opposed the Iran nuclear deal, and so where do you see them going with this?
Beating their head up against a brick wall. I don't know. I think the cake is baked on that deal, and they can pound their chests, and they won't be alone. A lot of Republicans will be doing that. And it's not that they don't have legitimate issues and complaints. It's certainly a complicated deal, and you've seen Democrats who aren't voting for it, but the votes are there, and it's a messy procedure and a messy process, but it's over, I think.
You know, and it's interesting because I think Senator Thune speaks rightly when he gets criticized by really hard-right conservatives for not defunding and defunding Planned Parenthood and stopping the budget and doing all these things, because what he'll say is all you got to do is count the votes. So we can't do these things. So if you can't do them, you can certainly count the votes in this. Why keep it up? I mean, yes, you can have your vote and make your political statement. And we all know that's exactly what it is, a political statement. It has nothing to do with legislation or legislating or being statespeople. It's all about politics, fine. But it seems to me like when you continue to drag that on for subsequent votes and raise it up again when the issue is really settled, it's really a counterproductive way to operate.
And what isn't getting done in the process?
That's a question, a legitimate question.
Well, tonight is the second GOP presidential debate. Any thoughts on what we need to watch for?
Well, I think we all know who everybody is watching, and I'm going to find out on live statewide radio whether Kevin agrees with me on this point. Donald Trump reminds me an awful lot of one of our former governors named Bill Janklow, who's a larger-than-life personality, no shortage of ego, but also no shortage of roll up your sleeves and get the job done, and I know what I want to do, and get out of my way so I can do it kind of a thing. And Trump hasn't had the opportunity to do that, but he certainly talks like that. And, you know, the difference, if Donald Trump becomes president, the difference is going to be Bill Janklow knew how to work the levers of government in a small state like South Dakota. He could really have a lot of control over legislators and the legislature as a body through just the whole process of, you know, recruiting candidates to run and all of that stuff that you do in the machine part of politics. Donald Trump will have a much tougher time at the national level because there's a lot more moving parts there. But I guess I'll throw it to you, Kevin, and see if you agree with my assessment. The more I watch Donald Trump, the more I'm hearing like Bill Janklow from his days and doing his State of the State speeches and those kinds of things.
Well, I certainly think there's some similarities. I think that they diverge in a pretty sharp way in the details. And Janklow, you know, who could give a two-hour State of the State message that would be extraordinarily detailed and all kinds of government details and all kinds of budget facts and everything else and laws thrown into it. You know, brilliant mind for the law and legislation and government. And Trump has no details, as far as I'm concerned, and he's been criticized for that, and he still has no details. So I don't think he understands much about government. I don't think he understands much about the political process in terms of the machinery. He understands the message really well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Mike Rounds said something recently about, you know, because he and Thune are trying to treat Trump carefully, but they're speaking out. One of the things Rounds said, I think, was he's expressing a frustration for a lot of people. He's expressing what people think. And my thought on that was, well, he's expressing what a percentage of people think. He's certainly not expressing what most of the people I know think, not a lot of issues. And I think in that regard, Janklow was maybe a little bit truer, or a little bit closer to the people he was speaking to.
Yeah.
And I think Trump speaks to a really vocal minority more than Janklow did. Janklow spoke to a larger constituency, I think. But style, yeah, there's some real similarities.
Yeah. But, you know, former Governor Janklow also, you know, when he worked on an issue, he worked the issue and he made it right. Whether, you know, he was willing to change and adapt when he knew he was wrong.
Yeah, if you could get him to know that.
I'm sitting here trying to think of an example, and I'm sure there are some. But, I mean, you know, I was thinking of, too, the things that Trump does to his critics. Janklow had a similar style of trying to bat down the critics. And and you're right, Kevin. Janklow knew how to run government and how to get things done, and that will be the real question. If Trump can make it all the way over the finish line, will he have the same acumen and the same, you know, ability to really get done what he wants to get done?
But that's a great point, too, Denise, about the price that you paid for standing up and criticizing Bill Janklow was similar to what you may pay if you're a politician standing up and taking on Donald Trump.
Well, I'll give you one personal story that my husband is a state employee, and when we had our first child, none of the immunizations under the state health plan were covered. It all had to be out-of-pocket expenses. So I called him on it and said, you're talking about child immunizations, and you don't even cover your own employees' kids. And
wow.
He called me and said, you're absolutely right. And now they're covered. So, I mean, you know, when you can point out and you're right, I mean, I never challenged him unless I knew I was right. But, you know, he was willing to go to work on it and make it better.
Yeah, and I think especially in issues like that, where a person comes with a problem that
exactly.
the government isn't addressing or that is making worse. And I think you could get him to listen there.
I think it was a different story if you were getting in his way when he had something he wanted to get done. You wanted to talk about maybe another idea or something.
No.
You know, but yeah.
No, and his mind was set. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So the Iowa caucuses, though, are just 5 months away. Do you think South Dakotans are really paying attention to this? Presidential, the Republican presidential primary? Or are we just waiting to see how this is going to filter down? Thin out a little, maybe.
We're a long way out here, Denise and I are from Iowa, so it's harder to, you know, other people might have a better perspective. The people that I talk to, it's not huge right now. I think there's some perspective there, which is means it's probably about time for Denise and I to bet on whether Hillary will be
not looking so good
one.
Right now.
All for one. But I think Thune made a joke the last time around where everybody was pushing him to run, and he said, oh, yeah, I should jump in over in Iowa and finish fourth to whoever. And he listed a whole bunch of people that are a lot more conservative than he is, you know, which is fairly conservative. Mm-hmm. So I think that's I'm always amazed at that state and that process has as much influence as it does.
Mm-hmm. And I've been thinking throughout this process that I bet John Thune is glad he didn't get into this race as presidential candidate.
Absolutely.
What a messy mess. Yep. Yeah.
He looks a lot more relaxed.
He's got a good sense for what's coming. And I think he's made good decisions twice.
All right. Well, Kevin and Denise, we're out of time. I want to thank you for taking time and coming on Midday today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, especially when Denise is on.
Oh,
thanks,
Kevin.
Thanks.
Happy birthday to Susan Smith at SDSU. She's a good old journalism political reporter who covered the legislature with me. Today's her birthday.
Cool.
Awesome.
Oh, cool.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, Susan.
KLO TV Rapid City reporter Kevin Wooster and Denise Ross, the editor of the Black Hills Knowledge Network South Dakota Dashboard, joining us today on our Dakota Political Junkies. And when we come back, we're going to ask the question, shall religion play a role in 21st century politics? You're listening to Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.